At the outset, nothing in this podcast should be interpreted as legal advice. Further, the views or opinions expressed in this podcast do not represent those of the university. Please email campbelllawreporter@email.campbell.edu for any media inquiries and third-party distributions. Welcome to the Campbell Law Reporter Podcast. This legal podcast strives to expand Campbell University's mission to lead with purpose by reporting with purpose. We hope to breathe new life into the dusty reporters on the shelves by reporting the content through captivating discussions. Our mission is to provide current and interesting reporting on legal topics affecting today's professionals. Listeners can expect to hear from various hosts throughout the year.
Hey, Camels, you know what day it is, and the Campbell Law Reporter is back with another episode for you this week. My name is Blake Swanner, and I'm going to be your host for today's episode.
October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, so we wanted to record this special episode to start the conversation about domestic violence and its prevalence within our community. Today, we have Kaylee Olander and Emma Tillotson with us from Campbell's own Law Students Against Sexual Assault and Domestic Violence Club. We're going to be discussing statistics and resources, how the legal field is intertwined within this issue, and how to bring awareness to domestic violence and what you can do to help. This is a hard conversation to have for many people, and we do want to note that this episode does have personal stories of domestic violence that may be difficult to hear. As always, we thank you for listening, and we hope that our followers are able to learn something special about this domestic violence club and what they are doing for our community right now.
We are here with Law Students Against Sexual Assault and Domestic Violence here at Campbell, and we have Emma here with us that is going to tell us about their purpose and their goals. Emma, could you tell us a little bit about this club and how you are currently raising awareness?
Yeah, so the purpose of this organization specifically at Campbell is to raise awareness for sexual assault and domestic violence, not only in our own community, but nationally. We want to be able to show everyone in the law school community that this isn't something that you just see on TV, that it is happening and it is very important. As of right now, we're trying to raise awareness in our community while also going out into the community. Ever since COVID has kind of, the restrictions have died down, we're able to get back into the shelters and help donate more of our time. We're going to have a clothing drive eventually, that sort of thing. We want to focus on providing survivors the resources that they have available here and nationally.
Okay, Kaylee, can you tell us about a typical meeting that y'all have and current things that y'all were doing?
Okay, so this month we had two members of North Carolina Legal Aid come in and talk about what they do for victims of domestic violence. They went through, you know, just step by step in the process, how it works when somebody comes to them and is a victim of domestic violence, really from start to finish with the first complaint and then how it ends with the protective orders and things like that. We also do a lot of different trainings. We have people come in and do like trauma-informed lawyering training. We had that last year. And we also do things, restorative things for the students. Like we're doing a final exam prep little get together next month.
Okay, Emma, you've talked to us about the past clothing drive and other things like that that y'all have been helping throughout the community. Can you talk a little bit about how COVID has affected these drives and your calls in general and the barriers that have been presented recently?
So COVID caused a lot of problems for everybody. I mean, it was a huge pandemic around the world. So many people lost their lives, but specifically for survivors of sexual assault and domestic violence, it caused a lot of barriers. A lot of the shelters closed. They weren't accepting new people. Survivors were stuck in the house with their partners. It became so much harder for everybody to recognize the signs and the symptoms of domestic violence and sexual assault. As well as for us at Campbell, we always did a clothing drive. We would always go to court with the survivors. We would help volunteer in the shelters and soup kitchens. And when COVID started, all of that shut down. They wouldn't let us in the shelters because it was a safety hazard. They started letting us do the clothing drive again, but everything had to be brand new with tags still on it in wrapping. And so it prevented us from fully being able to help the community as much as we would have liked.
Domestic violence comes in all different sorts of capacities, and many times it's not as apparent as physical abuse. Can you talk to us the difference about how you face physical versus non-physical abuse in terms of legal barriers and evidentiary issues that you often see?
Yeah, so of course, you know, if the evidence is not physical or the abuse is not physical, then it is harder to prove. And so that can cause issues when it comes to getting protective orders and stuff, although the statutes do provide a space for emotional abuse to receive a protective order. But just in general, you know, you can't take a picture of emotional abuse and bring it to the police or bring it to the judge. And so that can cause a barrier. And then also just the mindset that emotional abuse victims are in, because the perpetrator is convincing them that it didn't happen, it's different than physical abuse, because, you know, everybody can see the results of that in a lot of cases. And so that causes evidentiary issues later on.
Okay, so Kaylee touched on a couple of acts and statutes that specifically pertain to victims of domestic violence. Emma, can you tell us a little bit more about these acts and statutes and what they do to specifically protect victims?
Yeah, so a big one is the Violence Against Women Act. So this act provides protection for all victims of domestic violence, dating violence, sexual assault, or stalking. But it's not just available for women. They're widely available for all individuals, regardless of their sex, gender identity, or sexual orientation. Along with the Violence Against Women Act, Kaylee mentioned the DVPOs in North Carolina. And specifically for North Carolina, you can get a DVPO for physical abuse, sexual assault, harassment, or placing someone in fear of imminent serious bodily injury. So North Carolina's DVPO encompasses emotional abuse, which is becoming more prevalent in the community. Along with the DVPOs and the Violence Against Women Act, survivors of sexual assault and domestic violence have two different pathways of reporting. They can report through law enforcement and file criminal charges, but they can also go to an attorney and file civil charges in the form of the DVPOs, other restraining orders, and even some tort claims now. It's becoming more prevalent to sue abusers instead of bringing criminal charges.
So we've talked about how these acts and the DVPOs, how they're put in place to protect victims. Can you tell us a little bit about the effectiveness of these things put in place and any short-term or long-term effects that these acts have on victims and their abusers?
Yeah, so DVPOs in general are very effective for survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. It can help get them out of the house, out of this area, and once they've taken a step back, a lot of times they'll be willing to file charges. Another big consequence of a DVPO is the abuser cannot own a firearm. That greatly diminishes any likelihood of their partner being shot or killed. But a big problem with this is the Supreme Court has just granted cert on a new case, United States v. Rahimi, that is challenging this as a Second Amendment violation. If this goes through and the Supreme Court does say you can't make a abuser not own a firearm, it could cause a lot of problems for survivors of domestic violence and their safety in their own home, because a lot of them still end up living with their abusers.
Okay, Kaylee, we've talked a lot about non-physical abuse and emotional abuse that many people face. And you were telling me earlier a little bit about your personal testimony, and I was wondering if you minded speaking on that with everyone now.
Of course. So I am a survivor of an abusive situation, and it was, you know, in every element except for physical. And so that was hard for me to, like, acknowledge being a survivor because, you know, I'm like, well, he never put his hands on me. But I am, and that is, you know, a valid form of abuse, and he did virtually control every aspect of my life. And so, you know, it was hard for me, like, to validate being a survivor, but I just want everyone to know, like, in our community and through the club, that, you know, any form of abuse is valid, and you getting out of that situation is something to be recognized. And, you know, these resources that the club provides and that the community has are available to you as well if it was emotional abuse. Like I said, you know, there's evidentiary issues where it's harder to go to the police. And, you know, in my situation, I didn't even call it abuse until I was already out. and somebody else told me, like, oh yeah, that was abusive. And so sometimes it takes time to realize, you know, it's been almost a year and I'm still realizing things that, you know, it's things that come up or remind me of something that happened, and that is totally valid. It doesn't make it any less or that it didn't happen. That's just how memory works. So not only did I have, you know, my abuser in my ear constantly saying that he wasn't doing anything wrong or that I was crazy, but you also have that stigma that emotional abuse is not abuse. And so I just want to reassure everyone and, like, through the club, educating people that it is abuse.
So Kaylee, you were talking about how you didn't really speak on this until months and almost a year later, and how sometimes memories and things still trigger it and bring it up. This seems like a common theme for victims of domestic violence, that it's not talked about and that there is this stigma around it that you were discussing. If there was anything that you could tell yourself back in time or anything that you want to share with others that you feel like someone in this situation needs to know to help them, what would you say to them?
I just hope that people who, you know, might be in a similar situation to what I was have as supportive friends as I did, because I was still able to talk to them about what was going on, and they were very supportive and they were there for me and they were patient. You know, like, through the cycle, they were really just very kind and supportive of me and were ready for me when I got out, were there to support me. And so I really do credit, you know, not only the Law Students Against Domestic Violence community, but my best friends for helping me get out of that situation. And so I think, you know, if you find yourself in a situation where you can't even talk to any of your friends about what is going on anymore, then I would encourage you to, like, seek the help of a counselor, no matter what. Seek the help of a counselor and talk to them about it, because, you know, if you can't talk about it, then there really is something wrong. And I also say that Ruth Cooper here at the law school is not a mandated reporter. And so if you want to talk to somebody and, you know, not have it go through any legal processes, if you do go to a professor, then they are mandated reporters, but Ruth is not.
Kaylee, thank you so much for sharing that with us. I know that it's very difficult to speak on for anyone dealing with this situation, and so we really appreciate you be willing to talk about it with us. You also discussed Ruth Cooper in terms of resources available here at Campbell Law. Do you mind speaking a little bit more on reporters here in terms of mandatory reporters versus having more discretionary measures and other school resources that students here can reach out to?
Of course. So, like I said, you know, all faculty and professors are mandated reporters except for Ruth Cooper, who's the counselor here. But, you know, if that is a route that you want to take, then, you know, just be aware of that. But at the school, we also have other resources. The club provides a lot of resources, and we're going to add those into the notes of the show if anyone needs those. But we do distribute them through the club as well.
In terms of mandatory reporters, what are the typical steps that they may take in order to help victims of abuse?
So if you decide to go that route, the mandated reporter can help you in filing a police report, getting a medical exam, and finding support groups and other therapeutic methods like that. But Ruth also provides free therapy appointments, and she has resources as well, just for, like, you know, personal stuff if you want to do that.
We were discussing about how this is something that widely affects our community, especially here at home in Raleigh, North Carolina. Do you mind talking about a little bit of the statistics for people so that they are more aware of just how pertinent this issue is in our community?
Yeah, so in North Carolina, in a single day in 2020, 75% of the North Carolina domestic violence programs served over 1,100 survivors and their children. 569 survivors and their children found refuge at these shelters or transitional housing, whereas another 57 requests for services went unmet due to a lack of resources. Along with that, in North Carolina in 2020, there were 91 intimate partner homicides. And so that relates back to the DVPOs with the lack of firearms that can help that number go down.
So, Kaylee, you touched on earlier that not only women are victims of domestic violence, but also men. Can you also touch on how much of an issue that is within our community and the men that are in domestic violence situations?
Yes. So, like I said, the Violence Against Women Act covers not only women victims, but anyone who is a victim of domestic violence. So, 1 in 4 women are victims of domestic violence, and 1 in 9 men also experience severe intimate partner violence. Only 34% of people who are injured by intimate partners receive medical care for their injuries. 1 in 5 women and 1 in 71 men in the United States has been raped in their lifetime. 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 women have experienced some form of physical violence by an intimate partner. So there really is no mold for victim perpetrator. Anyone can be a victim or a perpetrator of sexual and domestic violence. On a single day in 2020, domestic violence hotlines received 21,000 calls on an average of almost 15 calls per minute.
So is there anything else that y'all would like to add that people need to know about, or anything that you think needs to be spread to increase awareness?
I just want everyone to feel supported in our community and know that everyone is welcome at our Law Students Against Sexual Assault and Domestic Violence meetings. You guys can follow us on Instagram, LSASADV, CU Law.
We just want to thank both of you, Emma and Kaylee, for coming out and speaking with us and taking the time out of your day. Kaylee, for you sharing your personal testimony, specifically this month for spreading awareness of domestic violence for October.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us and helping us spread awareness throughout this month.
This is the Campbell Law Reporter. Thank you for listening to the Campbell Law Reporter podcast. We look forward to you joining us every other Wednesday at 7 a.m. for a new episode, which can be accessed through your preferred podcasting listening platform. This is the Campbell Law Reporter.